Hi, Dave Emery here. Side 2 of For the Record program number 760, titled Bitcoinberg Part 2, The Snowden-Inspired Bitcoin-Operated Online Murder Incorporated. This program is being recorded on December 8th of the year 2013. We're going to plunge right back in and take a look at what underlies the social, economic, and philosophical superstructure, I guess one could say, behind the milieu, the political and economic milieu, of which Edward Snowden and company are a part. That's Mr. Get Rid of Social Security and Bring Back the Gold Standard, Snowden. In part one of the program, we were taking a look at, among other things, the assassination market. That has been put together explicitly in keeping with crypto-anarchic principles, and the creator of this explicitly has done so in order to project the values of laissez-faire marketplace onto the political realm. And in doing so, he very explicitly rejects the notion of democratic process, and did so, again, more or less overtly when queried by this writer in something that I guess it certainly is mindful of the assassination market, and I don't think it is really much of a reach to say that this too really is not all that surprising. Another article from Forbes magazine, also by Andy Greenberg, this from Forbes magazine of November 21st of 2013, alleged Silk Road boss Ross Ulbricht, now accused of 6 murders for hire and denied bail. That again by Andy Greenberg, Forbes magazine, November 21st of 2013. Summing up what's in this story, the lead paragraph, a New York judge denied bail to alleged Silk Road creator Ross Ulbricht Thursday, based in part on fresh accusations of violence. That the 29-year-old allegedly commissioned the murders of a total of 6 people through would-be hitmen he contracted online, 4 more than the 2 attempted killings described in the prosecutor's original complaint. And again, what this article alleges is that in addition to, I thought there was one here, it says 2 attempted killings that were in the original complaint against Snowden, Freudian slip, against Ross Ulbricht. Now, Ross Ulbricht, the alleged mastermind of Silk Road, has been charged with 4 more contract killings, again, to be arranged online and using Bitcoins in a manner not altogether dissimilar from the assassination marketplace. Remember that Ross Ulbricht was somebody we looked at in For the Record 760. He is the alleged mastermind of Silk Road, a clandestine online network in which people could engage in gambling, purchase firearms, sell drugs, illegal drugs, that is, also market forged visas, forged passports, and arrange contract killings. And that, again, that encrypted, that used the Tor network, and that network was called the Silk Road. Eventually, Ross Ulbricht was arrested by the FBI. We noted in that program that Ross Ulbricht is a devotee, just like Edward Snowden, of Ron Paul and the Ludwig von Mises Institute. So again, when we're looking at the milieu of Silk Road, we're looking at the milieu of Edward Snowden. Now again, bear in mind that the alleged mastermind of Silk Road was operating on libertarian principles, basically inspired by exactly the same elements as Ron Paul. Skipping down in this story, the writer notes, to support the prosecution's argument that Ulbricht represented a flight risk, he noted that Ulbricht had taken steps towards applying for citizenship in the island nation of Dominica and he had discussed moving there with friends on Facebook. The island nation of Dominica, by the way, was the target of what has been known as the Bayou of Pigs affair, a group of Nazis and white supremacists from the U.S. and Canada were training to invade the island nation of Dominica in the Caribbean and turning it into sort of a white supremacist homeland, but basically sort of an anything-goes commercial hub, not altogether unlike what I believe Ross Ulbricht had in mind with the Silk Road that he allegedly presided over. One of the things that's interesting is that in that invasion, Ron Paul's name was brought up as one of the people behind the operation, as was the name of David Duke, the Ku Klux Klan and white supremacist leader, with whom Ron Paul has been networking for a period of decades. Another name that came up in connection with the Dominican operation was that of Don Black, one of the creator of the Stormfront website, and another individual with whom Ron Paul has apparently been networking for a period of decades, running up right through the 2012 elections. So it looks like Ross Ulbricht certainly, for whatever reason, seemed to find Dominica as a likely place to hang his hat. I would note that, again, what the Bayou of Pigs invaders had as a goal was to set up sort of a no-holds-barred area where all sorts of contraband and gambling and all kinds of things could be conducted with, of course, the ultimate eye at using the profits to build their movement. Whether or not there's any link between that and what Ross Ulbricht allegedly had in mind with his residence there is anybody's guess. Wouldn't surprise me if Ulbricht also saw this sort of an anything-goes sort of a proposition. I mentioned that the Silk Road, sort of deep internet site, as it has been called, was closed down with the bust of Ross Ulbricht. Shortly thereafter, however, another similar operation called the Sheep Market, that's sheep as in what you heard in the meadow, S-H-E-E-P, the Sheep Marketplace, opened to take the place of the Silk Road. And again, it was a similar sort of clandestine online network to be used for the same kinds of things, gambling, trafficking in illegal drugs, firearms, forged visas and forged passports, contract killing, various activities like that. And it was said that the sheep marketplace had none of the vulnerabilities of the Silk Road. Well, apparently it did have at least one vulnerability. It appears to have disappeared, taking $100 million or maybe more of the listeners' money with this. This basically addresses the fundamentals of what's wrong, not just with the Bitcoin concept, but the principles of libertarianism themselves. And again, I note that many people of good faith and sincerity have been attracted to the libertarian philosophy, but the fact of the matter is regulations, rules, laws, these are things that people have always found to be fundamental in order to protect them from malfeasance. Now, the following article is from the Daily Mail in the United Kingdom. This article, anonymous online marketplace that replaced Silk Road vanishes, taking $100 million of its users' money with it. It's by Joshua Gardner of the Daily Mail. It reads in part, a shady online marketplace that anonymously sold drugs and guns has virtually disappeared, leaving illegal vendors believing they've been scammed out of as much as $100 million. Sheep Marketplace emerged as the go-to replacement to Silk Road, a similar bazaar shuttered by the FBI in October. Now, users of the site, which operated outside the law to begin with and dealt only in anonymous bitcoins, fear that that site may have been a scam all along. Excuse me, I'm going to pause here at this point. Can you imagine? This is now the users of Sheet Marketplace, who got shorn, by the way, now they fear it may have been a scam all along. Well, you know, I would think that somebody approaching something like this would at least take into account that something like that might have been at least a possibility. Just consider what is at stake here. Hey, Homer, you don't suppose that Sheet Marketplace might have been a scam all along? I don't know why you'd say that, Jethro. Why might you think that a clandestine financial network used for gambling, the selling of firearms, illegal drugs, forged visas, forged passports, and setting up contract killings and political assassinations, why might you think that would be anything but above board? Certainly sounds okay to me. Yeah, me too, Jeff. Me too, Jethro. I was just checking. I mean, my goodness. You might suspect something like that right out of the gate. Anyway, resuming with the story. Now, users of the site, which operated outside the law to begin with and dealt only in anonymous bitcoins, fear it was a scam all along. Shielded from authorities and using special software to access the so-called deep website, buyers could find drugs, guns, and even hitmen. Buyers would put their bitcoins into the marketplace where sellers would withdraw them, and with all of the transactions moderated by the website, which is where the first issue arose. In the days before the shutdown, vendors suddenly found themselves unable to access the bitcoins that were tied up in the site's wallet. As they complained, they found their comments suddenly yanked from the site's forums. Buyers also began to see suspicious things in the time leading up to this possible scam. Some vendors, though not all, began to list their drugs and other goods at prices far lower than ever before. Now, many believe they were being bilked out of as many of their bitcoins, a difficult-to-trace form of online currency currently worth over $1,000 apiece, as possible before taking the money and running. On Sunday, visitors to the site found a note in place of the homepage that claimed a vendor called eBook 101 had stolen from the site's cache of bitcoins. This vendor found a bug in one system and stole 5,400 BTC, reads the brief note. And it goes on to say that perhaps as many as $100 million in the user's money was spirited out of this. And again, basically, the Sheet Marketplace is gone with $100 million or more in its users' bitcoins. And forgive me if that sort of impromptu bit of comedy didn't go over. Actually, past the point, I think, Bitcoin and past the point, libertarianism are a form of dark comedy in that this type of thing is built into, well, let's not have any rules or regulations or police. Sometimes, if that's the way you feel about it, well, go to the Sheet Marketplace. Oh, wait a minute, it's gone. Oh, well, there'd be something else probably to replace that. Now, one of the points that I made in Side 1 is that in addition to my own work, a number of very sharp listeners have been posting some very relevant articles and links in the comments section, and some very shrewd comments and also some very important articles are being posted by someone, a colleague of mine, who uses the on-air name of Terrafractal, Terrafractyl. And in one of his posts, he pointed something out. Bitcoin has an overall inventory of a fixed number of 21, I think it's 21 billion, maybe 21 million. I'll give you the exact figure. That point was supposed to see to it that Bitcoin would not be subject to hyperinflation. It's 21 million Bitcoins. However, since this and other things permit the value of each individual Bitcoin to soar, it is subject to hyperdeflationary pressures. In other words, instead of the currency becoming each denomination of the currency becoming worthless, each denomination of the currency becomes so expensive that it becomes unusable. It cannot be translated into any other currency, which becomes too cheap by comparison. Terrafractal writes, one of the interesting aspects about the Bitcoin phenomenon is that the more people that start using Bitcoin, the greater the deflationary pressure on the value of the Bitcoins. That's because there is a fixed maximum of 21 million Bitcoins that can ever exist. So the greater the demand for Bitcoins, the more each Bitcoin will cost in other currencies. With the Chinese market now warming up to Bitcoin, and with all of those potential new users, we might see a fascinating example of a hyper-deflationary virtual gold bubble. An interesting article was posted by Olga Karif, last name K-H-A-R-I-F as in Frank, on the Bloomberg News of November 6th of 2013, 11-6-2013. Bitcoin's climb to record on wider acceptance and China trade. And note the fact that, again, because more people are becoming interested in this, then there appears to be a deflationary factor. Bitcoin's price hit a record of $265 on the Bitstamp online exchange, driven by wider acceptance of this virtual currency. The digital money, which can be used to pay for goods and services on the internet, has risen 20-fold so far this year as trading activity has increased. Bitcoins were trading at $251.36 a piece at 6:30 p.m. in New York on Bitstamp, one of the more active web-based exchanges where bitcoins are traded for dollars, euros, and other currencies. The rally comes a month after the closing of the Silk Road website, where people could obtain drugs, guns, and other illicit goods using bitcoins. The virtual currency lost a third of its value in the days after the website was shut down. Bitcoins are becoming increasingly popular, particularly in China, said Ugo Ebunike, that's capital U-G-O, capital E-G as in George, B-U-N-I-K-E, Director of Business Development at Index Universe, an index-funded researcher. Now, in addition to the fact that simply more people are becoming interested in using bitcoins, and because of the fact that there are only 21 million of them, that is drastically increasing the value of each bitcoin. So, by the way, has the demand for bitcoin in China. It's more than a little interesting to note that, because something very interesting happened in China not too long ago. Now, note, of course, that the sheep marketplace, the successor to Silk Road, vanished. So did $100 million in bitcoins. Another of Terrafractal's observations. It would be pretty hilarious if Bitcoin, a currency cherished It would be pretty hilarious if Bitcoin, a currency cherished by those haunted by hyperinflationary fears, becomes an object lesson in the dangers of deflation. But it's hard to see how this lesson will be avoided if Bitcoin ever really caught on. One of the main features of the currency is that it's capped out at $21 million, but you can divide each coin up into smaller and smaller pieces. Therefore, the reasoning goes, Bitcoin has deflated the inflation beast while still maintaining the scalability required to handle the volume of transactions in virtually any sized economy. Revolution awaits, by the way, that's sarcasm. And this is sort of true but the victory over inflation comes at the cost of built-in deflation, correlated to the growth of the Bitcoin economy. Just imagine, he writes, if dollars grew more expensive with the growth of the U.S. economy. So the more Bitcoin grows in popularity, the greater the deflation, the greater the payout to the earliest Bitcoin investors, and the greater the temptation to keep holding on to those Bitcoins. another story here. If you believe in Bitcoin, you should never buy anything in Bitcoin. That is by John Wiesenthal of the Business Insider of November 10th, 2013. Many Bitcoin believers think that the digital currency will one day become the preeminent currency of the Internet. They basically see it becoming the Internet's version of gold in that it's naturally scarce, independent, virtually impossible to manipulate. That's wrong, and crucially suited for a digital world where money ought to be able to be moved seamlessly and at no cost. As we're going to see, Bitcoin can indeed be manipulated and has been. The point that Mr. Wiesenthal is making in this Business Insider article, as more people have gotten into Bitcoin, the price has gone way up, skipping down. Remember the pizza that was purchased for $25 in Bitcoins years back? Had that person not bought that pizza, it would be worth nearly $3 million. That purchase was a catastrophic decision, as that was probably the most expensive pizza of all time. Of course, this presents a catch-22. How can Bitcoin become a real currency if it's not used in transactions? And why would anyone use it in transactions if becoming a real currency offers so much more price appreciation? Something to think about there. Again, the fundamental deflationary features are built in to the very nature of Bitcoin. It may be brilliant computer code, but the concept is flawed. Remember how one of the things leading to the appreciation and the value of Bitcoins was demand in China? That demand appears to be going down. The following is from ZDNet, that Zebra Donald Net, of November 12th of 2013. An article by Liu, capital L-I-U-G-I, capital J-I-A-Y-I, as in India. Hong Kong Bitcoin trading platform vanishes with millions, unquote. Of course, that sounds just like sheep marketplace, doesn't it? This reads in part, when ardent Chinese Bitcoin investors found that they could no longer access the website of Global Bond Limited, or GBL, in the early morning of October 26th, it was already too late. One investor under the pseudonym of South American Vicuna organized an online group for the losing traders and told IT Times on Monday that more than 30 million won, UWAN, from 500 investors, many of them whom sold homes to get into the virtual currency trade, could never be retrieved. Skipping down, GBL self-proclaimed that the local government had approved virtual currency exchange back on June 8th and lured buyers in with high leverage and high yield. Well, now $5 million is gone. There is a very, and this again, that article is from the ZDNet, Hong Kong Bitcoin trading platform vanishes with millions, and it's by the UGI, J-I-A-Y-I. A very technically complex story appeared in the MIT Technology Review of November 8th of 2013. This story is titled, Bitcoin Vulnerability Could Allow Malicious Miners to Seize Control. Again, from the MIT Technology Review of 11-8-2013. This article will be in the description for the record program 764. There will be a link on the front page of the broadcast and or in the For the Record category that you can select on the front page of the SpitfireList.com website. This article reads in part, one of Bitcoin's big advantages is that it is decentralized with nobody in overall control. But now a simple strategy has emerged that could allow almost any group to take over, say, computer security analysts. And skipping down. Now, this is a highly technical discussion, so I'm going to leave this for most of it for the description For the Record 764, which again will be in the For the Record category by the time people hear this program. Just to give you an idea of what's here. But Bitcoin may not be quite as secure as everybody thought. Today, Itay Ayal, I-T-T-A-Y, capital E-Y-A-L, and Emin Gun Serer at Cornell University in Ithaca say they've discovered a flaw that allows any organized group of Bitcoin miners to take over the currency. And they say that some groups today are already big enough to do the job. And again, they cite the technical aspects of the computer code and how it operates and how people make payments and how someone knowledgeable for this can basically use computers to basically mess the whole thing up. An interesting article in the New York Times of December 5th of 2013, scamming with bitcoins is now becoming more or less overt. This is an article, "In the Murky World of Bitcoin, Fraud is Quicker Than the Law," by Nathaniel Popper, P-O-P-P-E-R, in the New York Times of December 5th of 2013. It was an invitation to a penny stock style pump and dump scheme, only this one involved Bitcoin, the soaring, slightly scary virtual currency that has beckoned and bewildered people around the world. While such bid-em-up, sell-em-off scams are shut down in the financial markets all the time, this one and other frauds involving digital money have gone unchecked. The reason, in no small part, government authorities do not agree on which laws apply to Bitcoin or even on what Bitcoin is. The person behind the recent scheme, a trader known on Twitter as Fontas, F-O-N-T-A-S, said in a secure internet chat that he operated with little fear of a crackdown. "For now, the lack of regulation allows everything to happen," unquote. And again, pump and dump schemes, you can be arrested. In fact, people are being prosecuted for various forms of illegal security manipulation as I speak. But on Bitcoin, that you can actually advertise to join a pump and dump scheme. Interestingly enough, again, the Tor network, which is favored by Bitcoin users, is not as impenetrable, it's not as secure as was believed to be. We have spoken about the Max Planck Institute in Germany, formerly the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, and its links to both the Third Reich and the post-war underground Reich in all probability. They are now, that is to say, people at the Max Planck Institute are working on making a network that would not be subject to the security flaws as the Tor network. Tor is T-O-R, Thomas Oregon Roger. This article is by Tony Simonite, S-I-M-O-N-I-T-E, of the MIT Technology Review of December 25th of 2013. Anonymity Network Tor needs a tune-up to protect users from surveillance. Skipping down, Stevens LeBlanc, a researcher at the Max Planck Institute for Software Systems in Kaiserslautern, Germany, guesses that by now the NSA and equivalent agencies likely could use traffic correlation should they want to. Skipping down, LeBlanc is working on the design of an alternative anonymity network called AQUA, A-Q-U-A, designed to protect against traffic correlation. Traffic entering and exiting an AQUA network is made to be indistinguishable through a mixture of careful timing and blending in some fake traffic. It will be interesting to see if Max Planck does develop a perfect vehicle for the use of Bitcoin. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 764, Bitcoinberg Part 2, The Snowden-Inspired Bitcoin-Operated Online Murder Incorporated. This program has been recorded on December 8, 2013. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.